All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Friday. It's November. I was going to say 12th and I misread the thing. It's November 2nd. Can't get this right. I can't read dates. I don't know why I can't do this. Friday, November 2nd, DFSR.com. I'm Doug Norrie.
This is James. This is like now fully reminiscent of us having a catch in the backyard where it's just like kind of in your head and you're like, I've thrown a ball 1,000 times just today, much less in my whole lifetime. It's more like 1,000,000. And yet I just know this is going to go at a 90 degree angle from my body. So.
I got the yips. I don't know what it is. I'm a classic yip guy. Like I was actually texting with someone else about this the other day, about just having the yips and saying it was Ian Kinsler blew the throw in the World Series. I was like, yeah, I get it. I've done that before. I've just simply can't. Once it gets in my head, forget it. And so reason, the stupid date thing.
Can't kill the guy.
I'm looking at the GD date right now as I said it too. And I still said 12. I don't know. I got like a disease or something. All right. DFSR.com. is the site, dfsr.com/NBA. If there's any trust left over after the date debacle, you can go over to dfsr.com/deals, actually, and we'll get you a free, still 7-day trial to our projection service powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA, NFL as well. We'll have our NFL game-by-game podcast going up later on this afternoon with me and Chris Durrell breaking down all that, so go and check that out on the feed. But today we're going to roll through NBA slate for Friday, a little smaller than usual Fridays, mostly because I think yesterday there was a few more games than we typically see on a Thursday. NBA is getting interesting now because the pricing on FanDuel is still, this is a theme, still very, very tight. They've really ramped up the pricing, especially on bench guys, which creates an interesting situation where typically in the past, reliable bench guys who are then going to get starts would usually slot themselves into pretty nice punt value plays, but the bench guys, if they've done anything, you know, coming in for 25 minutes a game or something like that, their price is already sort of fair by the time they hit the starting lineup. I can give some examples of that. Do you find the pricing, like last night I found it extraordinarily difficult with some of the plays, you know, recommending bench guys like JJ Redick and Jordan Clarkson and guys like Lou Williams, guys like this, because are you finding the pricing to be tight? And do you think there's still very much an edge because of it, or do you think that the pricing is so tight that it's actually just sort of whittling that down along the margins?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of an interesting conversation because I think on one hand, universally tight pricing would create an efficient market, right? Where if every player was priced perfectly, then no one could get an edge by making any given lineup. Every lineup that used all the salary would theoretically be projected to score the exact same number of points. So obviously, as pricing becomes more efficient, it's more difficult to make big mistakes. I still think that, especially on FanDuel, where the throwing away a player, it's worked out very strangely this year. I don't know why, but like, can you remember a beginning of a season where we had so many punt plays? This just seems outrageous to me. I feel like, you know, DFS, as we know it during the midseason, is often like you get a guy who's the obvious cheap guy that you can kind of plug in around the rest of your plays. And this season, it's been like, you know, you had two or three on many nights.
Really? So. See, I'm not seeing it that way. I wonder if it's just because of the nights that you and I sort of rotate this thing.
Do you want to just list? I can just list. There's guys on tonight's slate
Tonight there are some. Tonight's not. I guess maybe I'm just thinking last night where I felt like there was none. And maybe I'm just being too. I'm thinking too. Too soon in the past. Like I'm not.
Yeah, on Wednesday we ran like four of them or something.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe I'm just two Phoenix guys.
There's too much
of last night is left over for me where I felt like that wasn't the case. We'll get through.
You're a little traumatized, dude. Do you have a lineup based distress right now? Is that what's going on?
No. I just didn't like the way things were looking last night going in, and it kind of played out in the way that I thought it was going to. All right, we're gonna go roll through these game by game. There's some injury concerns that we're going to look at that are going to affect, like we said, some of those pump play kind of guys coming back from injury, some possible starting lineup shakeups for some of these teams. That's gonna be something that we're going to want to monitor. And then another theme I think we're going to talk about is just guys who still continue to run bad on shooting. But let's get into a 7 o'clock game. We only have one 7 o'clock game, and then it's 7:30, and then it's 8. So there's actually going to be a staggered time possibly on some news where we have – and that's always difficult. The reason I'm mentioning this is because as important a thing as anything else in the NBA is timing of starting lineups and injury news, because we just get it – so it's sometimes can come so close to lineup lock that when there's hours spread between the first game and some of the other really relevant ones, we can be put in a tough spot. Clippers go in and play the Magic. Two teams that I don't plan on watching tonight, just not. But there is a situation where Boban starts the second half last night against Embiid and ended up playing the most minutes I think he's played possibly in his whole career in a game. I actually meant to look that up, and I didn't. But
bobbing.
What do we? And we're gonna have this. We're gonna have this news. Do you think he sticks in the starting lineup? He played well. I mean, from a fantasy wise, he always
plays well.
He always plays well. So that's it's not that he played 23 minutes. Yeah. He went 15-11 with 3 blocks, an assist, and a steal. They start. I don't know if it's because the big man. What do you think here? Like, do you think that even just the 23 minutes off the bench is enough at 3,600 to say like the dude could play 15 and possibly just get there in these prices?
I mean, he played 11 against Washington on the 28th and scored 33 fantasy points. So, yeah, I think Boban is a good play. I mean, particularly on FanDuel where you could just throw away a position anyway. So, you know, heaven forbid he plays like the 4 or 5 minutes he was playing in a few games earlier this season. You just toss it and move on with your life. I don't know. I mean, certainly if you get the word that he's starting, he's a lock. If they're capable of just starting him in the second half, you know, it's funny, leading into last night's plays, on Thursday, I had written up the center position, and I said about Embiid, I was like, who's supposed to cover this guy? Like, they're going to play Boban 10 minutes. They're going to play Gortat. And then what they're – like, normally they'd like to go small, the Clippers, with a Harris and Harrell, but that's not going to be a possibility tonight against Embiid. So their answer was more Boban. I do wonder a little bit if that was part of it. Like, we just need tall guys out here on the court. Yeah. Gortat can only play 19 minutes. So, like, it's just – they just called his card. But if they have it in their deck of cards here to bust out the 25 minute Boban game, then I'm certainly intrigued. I think you'll also see his price go up, and I think people will be riding high after last night's performance. So yeah, I think one way or the other, you could see some significant Boban ownership.
I think we're gonna see ownership, even if I bet you his ownership is high, even if he doesn't get the start. I think people will stick in their minds that it's been the 15 or so minutes, or 15, like 11, and then 24 minutes in the past. That's all he needs. I mean, honestly, it's also funny too. 10 minutes at 3,600 might not be your lowest drop score on FanDuel, like for just the way that he plays. So that's something we're going to keep an eye on. Thankfully, this is the first game. Not sure what else we get excited about for either of these teams. The minutes, maybe you get a 36-minute Aaron Gordon game. It really hasn't been the case for them. The rest of the team is pretty bad. Is there anything else to like on either one of these squads?
Yeah, not especially. I mean, I really can't stand what the Clippers are doing from a DFS perspective right now. It's legitimately hard to watch if you want to try to find who's going to get the actual playing time. The one guy I will say that I think, well, he's more expensive than he was last night already, but I think Danilo Gallinari, like 35 minutes for him, I think is the plan going forward. But the Clippers have been involved in so many weird games that he and, frankly, Harris too, just haven't been playing what I believe to be the plan's worth of minutes. So I think 7,000 is still a playable price for him. I think if you can just picture the game staying close and you don't think that they care about the second half of a back-to-back, then Gallo makes sense as a good play. One guy I just want to give a shout-out to, because he wasn't always this way, is Avery Bradley.
Oh, yeah, man.
My guy, 36 minutes last night, and you can come up with 6.9 fantasy points. Like, is it a plan thing? Like, what the heck is going on with Avery Bradley? Like, they're just giving him the Patrick Beverley, like, heavy treatment where he just doesn't get to touch the ball.
Yeah, he's a corner. He's like a 3-and-D guy at this point, especially because they play Gallo.
He's always been a 3-and-D guy, but sometimes that means you get to shoot threes.
Like, yeah, but I was going to say, is the Gallo and Harris thing, when that starts at the top of the key, those guys are not. The plan is not to get him. It's clearly not to get him the ball. So he was a funny one we were joking about last night, because it was like, well, he's entered the realm of, you know, like,
yeah, Dante Cunningham.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this group of guys that can just stand on the court for 35 minutes and just show up with like single digit fantasy points. Not easy to do in the current NBA. All right, let's get into some of these other games. It's 7:30. The lone 7:30 game is Houston goes in and plays Brooklyn. I don't see a way around not stacking the Houston starting lineup here. I wrote a Paul Gordon and Capella specifically. I guess you can maybe throw Melo in there too. This seems like the easiest play for me of all time, and I'm wondering if people are going to talk themselves out, because the Rockets have looked very bad this year so far. They are 1-5 or 1-6 to start the season, but am I crazy over the top to just think this is like a very easy stack in these three guys without Harden again?
Yeah, I can't believe that Paul's price has gone down $600 since the Portland game.
He's been bad.
I was looking at these. Well, fine. I was looking at the time of possession stats in preparation for a premium article I'm putting together right now. And Paul, he goes from being a 7.1 minutes per game time of possession guy, which is like pretty good still. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like going to be, that's like around like Damian Lillard, let's say, to when Harden's off the court or just not present at all, 9.1 minutes per game. So if you're just going to have the ball in your hand that much more often, some of these stats like assists and points too, they're just going to come up. And the fact that they're basically like his numbers are the same slash worse with Harden off the court. Just isn't sustainable. The guy's still talented. He's still going to, I mean, maybe you could argue that he's going to assist will struggle because Harden's the best guy to assist the ball to on this team. But I think that you'll see that come up. And I think in a very, very juicy Brooklyn matchup, I just can't wait to play Paul tonight. If he's not, I don't know, 90% owned, there's something wrong with the world. I will ask you a question about Brooklyn, though.
I like that statement. No, well, real quick about Paul. I agree with you that people, that this one seems so obvious, and it's like people are going to have it stuck in their head too much that like Houston's struggling or Houston, which they are, by the way. So I'm not debating that part of it. They're playing poorly. This team is fundamentally, in a lot of ways, very different than it was last season. There's been a pretty big turnover in personnel. And that for his career, that has not really affected Chris Paul at all. And by the way, you just mentioned things that happened for him. According to our on-court, off-court queries that we run, Paul gets an 11% bump in usage. That's about as high, based on our regress formulas, yeah. That's like you simply almost can't get higher than that. 8% more rebounds, 14% more assists. And by the way, the numbers, the actual numbers are way bigger than this. He's like heavily, heavily regressed. This guy gets, this is about the biggest bump in overall just performance you'll see from one player being on the court to the other player being off the court. It's like, it's so insane. Anyway, what are we going to ask about Brooklyn?
Well, so Brooklyn this year is a bottom three pace team. And that's what has me concerned. I mean, we're still going to play Paul anyway, but I'm just wondering, like, is the price reduction from FanDuel here kind of acknowledging that? Like, it's kind of interesting because, you know, pace is obviously a relative term. It's relative to, like, being a high pace or a low pace is just relative to what the rest of the league is doing. Yep. So last year, Brooklyn was a top six pace team, you know, right next to top five with Golden State with a 101.1 pace. This year, Brooklyn is a bottom four pace team, bottom three pace team with a faster pace than they played last year, 101.4. So could this just be a case of the rest of the league has adapted or changed something? Brooklyn, being Brooklyn, just has no clue what's going on. They're still doing their same old, and now they've just become a slow team by default.
Yeah, I don't know. That's how I personally have not watched a lot of Brooklyn games this year.
No?
Maybe one. I live in New York. I usually get them on and yes every once in a while. But their personnel hasn't changed. I think they're just probably playing the same exact thing. I was actually looking to see who they played so far to see if like there have been any like significant like pace down matchups. They played the Pistons a couple times. I mean, they have played some slower teams, the Knicks. I don't have a good answer for it. One guy, I did want to mention just these two other guys though. Eric Gordon is the other guy who I think is just a complete and utter auto lock going into this game. Another guy whose price has come down. The guy simply could not be running worse on shooting. He is 4 for his last 26 from three. He's shooting 23% on the season. He's shooting 30% from the field. If you think there's something broken about Eric Gordon and that he's going to just continue to just shoot the by far the worst of his career, then by all means, like continue to fade him. It's just not going to be the case. It's also funny too. I was wondering, actually, this is one of the worst runs of just three-point shooting in history by a guy who's been allowed to shoot this many times. Like, there's for sure guys that just, like, you know, Jeremy Grant, who just simply can't hit a three-pointer to save his life this season. But they only let him shoot two and a half times a game or something like that, right? Eric Gordon's taking 8 three-pointers a game and shooting at 23%. I'm wondering on a volume perspective, I wonder if there's been a worse run. Do you see, does he fit the Chris Paul, like, just, I hate to say lock it this early in the morning on a Friday, but these ones... I was incredulous that people might think about not playing him tonight.
No, I'm going to play Gordon for sure. I think, you know, like I talked about Brooklyn being a little bit slower. They're still very bad on defense. And again, the Rockets are just going to have to sort of rely on the volume from Paul and Gordon to make up the difference here. So I think, yeah, the fact that both these guys' prices come down now with Harden being out, just based on what is tantamount to just bad luck, I think, yeah, you'd be semi-nuts to not run both of them, especially, like you said, it's a smaller Friday slate than usual. I think there's actually less value on this slate than usual as well, so I think I'm going to definitely be taking a little bit of savings on what I imagine are the real expectations for those guys right now.
Yep, Paul, Gordon, Capella on DraftKings for me. I think that is pretty easy call, and we can probably move on. Brooklyn, they are just doing their same old thing. If you're lucky if you play 30 minutes for Brooklyn, and most of the guys just play 26.
I think you can play Caris LeVert. He had decent ownership the last time he played in big tournaments. He wound up playing 39 minutes. And that game went to overtime, but 34 minutes in regulation and had 40 fantasy points. Might be on the more expensive side, but if there's one guy on Brooklyn to not ignore entirely, it's probably LeBert.
Yeah, I have him at 32 minutes right now. I know he played the 39 right. against Detroit, but it was 29, 30, 31, 31, 27, 32 the games before, and that's why...
No, 32 sounds right. I think it was 34 in regulation. Again, it was a close game, and they really needed him out there for the scoring, but yeah, I think 32 is a good
number. Yeah, it's just so hard. These Nets guys, these are the ones you just wait for injuries on this team. You need like two guys. You need like a Joe Harris and a Dinwiddie to sit out or something like that, and then you can start playing. I'm just saying random guys, but like then you can start thinking about playing some of the Nets. Indiana goes in and plays Chicago. Indiana's been in a they've been in a lot of weird games this year. They've had a lot of blowouts. The starters have not really realized their minutes on the high end outside of one or two games. Finally, they played a 6-point game against New York the other day, and Oladipo only saw 32 minutes. We're getting minutes out of Collison. There's a great matchup against Chicago. Chicago is awful on defense this year. Just one of the worst. They might be the worst defensive team in the league, especially if they're going to start Jabari Parker going forward, who arguably might be the worst small forward defender in all of basketball if he's allowed to play a lot of minutes. So this is a good matchup, and I don't know if the plan is to kind of reduce some of the minutes on the starters. Like, we saw huge stuff out of Oladipo last year. We get 35 minutes out of Thad Young and Bogdanovich, but just really haven't seen it with the Pacers, and it seems like the price has come up because of the matchup.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with all that analysis. I don't think you want to play Oladipo at 9,000 now. It just hasn't crystallized. Like, and I'm also feeling really grateful that I advised this guy, the father of one of my son's basketball teammates, not to pick Oladipo in one of his top five picks. So you're welcome, Mike, if you're listening out there. Oladipo, I just think people just keep sitting around being like, this is the year for Oladipo, where he like turns into the $10,000 fantasy player. It just hasn't happened. Like, he's been reasonable on these prices. I think he's probably playable, but do you want to bend over backwards to play a guy who's averaging 39 fantasy points a game? I don't think so. And like you mentioned, a lot of weird game scripts. Fine. Oladipo's minutes have been very constant. 32, 36, 36, 33, 33, 32, 31, and then a 25-minute game to start the season. Like, it could just be that this is the new plan in Indiana to play these guys slightly fewer minutes, or to just try to, experiment and find out what works, or whatever people like to say. And yeah, I think for that reason, maybe you take a stab for big tournaments, maybe even a guy like Darren Collison, who we know has a 36-minute game in him. But like you said, in a 7-point game, he plays 23 minutes. So you want to be the guy on Darren Collison for 5,300, rather? I certainly do not. And then guys like Thad Young, who's like borderline playable at 5,000, has one good game, and he's now 6,100. So thanks a lot, FanDuel. Just make another guy. Like, he had 8 defensive stats. Does FanDuel not understand that that's not going to be the norm for him going forward? Like, well, I mean, if he's going to start the game with 24 points, you got to make him 6,000. Like, it's ridiculous.
I would call Oladipo like fairly priced at 9,000 in this matchup. But the problem is that fairly priced in DFS doesn't really get you a whole lot, right? Like, you're going to be...
Yeah, it's fine. It's a guy that if he's there, like, you're like, eh, okay.
On the Chicago side, this is basically the Zach LaVine show at this point. A guy, the usage is through the roof. I started discussing some premium article stuff. LaVine is just driving a whole lot more this year. He's getting to the line a ton. We were trying to look at guys whose production is sustainable going forward. And is LaVine, I mean, we agree that we think the LaVine, at least from like a volume shooting perspective and possibly even efficiency perspective, we kind of agree that we think that it probably is sustainable the way they're using him this year, right?
I think so. I mean, if you're sitting here and you're looking and you're comparing LaVine and Oladipo, LaVine is $700 cheaper on FanDuel, is averaging one more fantasy point per game, and there actually is a legitimate change to his game that we can point to and say, yes, this production, like, if you're driving more, your field goal percentage is going to go up. If you're driving more, you have more effective possessions, and your team is probably going to want you to have the ball more, right? Yep. So, yeah, I think LaVine is totally legit, and granted that you're probably not going to play Oladipo and LaVine, I think you'd be semi-nuts to play Oladipo over LaVine.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And then, like I said, he's up to 19 shots per game, and I think that is just going to be the plan going forward. What about Jabari Parker? Parker, the system is going to like him if they think he's starting 35 minutes. The foul trouble got him. Again, he's a terrible defender, so foul trouble is going to be in the cards for him just about every single game. But is he a guy that you could go back to? Because on a points-per-minute basis, he's a guy that has gotten it done before. He's only 5,800 on DraftKings. If he were to start again, would you feel comfortable going back to the well?
No. I would rather not, but you might still have to. I mean, definitely on DraftKings, where the price is a little bit further down. That Denver game was like, it was hard to watch, and I'm going to be one of those guys that I generally hate here, but I wonder if there's something going on with like the situation with the coaching there, because Parker comes out and gets the two quick fouls. Then he just randomly comes out for like 40 seconds in the second quarter and gets pulled again.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in the third and fourth quarters, plays a lot of minutes, but is like a total shell of himself, not shooting at all, not doing anything defensively, like, you know, not trying to steal, not trying to block, like just not fouling anyone, just kind of like out there looking scared. And it showed. I mean, 16 total fantasy points for this guy in 35 minutes after putting up just like piles of points per minute before that. I was a little bit shook by that. So, Parker, the price has come down dramatically. The matchup is arguably better than it was against Denver. It was 10% cheaper here. So maybe it's not insane to go back to the well. You don't want to overreact to one game, but if you did want to overreact to some, just the way something looked, that's how I felt about that last game.
OKC goes into Washington. OKC playing on the back-to-back here. They did pull out a victory last night. Big time come from behind win against the Hornets on the road, where they were down something like 14. To start the third quarter. The reason I know that is because my league pass feed is a little slow, and I was live betting the game, and the money line just kept going up. It was like plus 150, plus 220, and I just kept hammering each time it went up, and then I realized my thing was like a minute behind, and there was just a barrage of Hornets threes, and they were up 14. I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. I was like, need to get some better real-time thing going on here, because I was like, this is crazy. The OKC is going to come back. Now, they did end up pulling it out, so I kind of luck-boxed my way into those live bets.
That's
but
so funny.
Are you worried? I mean, Russ, they looked really, really bad. Russ kind of got there on his price last night because of a big second half, and they were kind of coming back, and he ended up playing a lot of minutes. It's one of those things where watching the game, you're like, this guy should just have seven more assists. They missed like five or six layups or dunks on passes that he had. Is he a guy you would trust at the most expensive? He's the most expensive guy basically on both sites tonight. Good over-under, back-to-back. Is he a guy that, you know, if we're going to talk about going stars and scrubs, is he the star to have?
Yeah, I think so. I think Westbrook, if we know that he can play, if they're just going to physically let him play 35 to 37 minutes again, you're going to see the price climb up to the mid-12s again. And right now that means he's a value. And I think being a day early on Westbrook doesn't usually kill you, just because he's got so the ball in his hands so much and the volume is so high in the shooting that the floor winds up being, you know, fairly high. I think, you know, you can run into some concerns, because I think we talked about this with Jokic or somebody the other day, but the idea being that 1 minute for Russell Westbrook is worth a lot fantasy wise. Oh, yeah. And if you're not going to get consistent minutes out of a guy like that, that can wind up killing you. It's been the curse for like Steph Curry and other guys like him in the past too, where guys like Brow, who have had more consistent minutes, wind up being safer plays. But I do think that going forward, like the thing with Russ is, given that it was a shoulder injury and not something like leg related, I'm not so concerned with him on the second half of a back-to-back, unless like we hear something beforehand. So yeah, I think you can play Westbrook. I think there's enough free guys going around tonight too that you can potentially make it work. The real question is going to be like, can you play him alongside Chris Paul on FanDuel? Because that would mean that you wouldn't get to play, you know, some premier punt guys like maybe like Dante Exum or something. So so that's really going to be the conversation, because I think I'd rather still play Paul. I think he's just a better value straight up.
Yes.
But if I can play both somehow, then I definitely don't mind doing that.
This strikes me as just the kind of game you don't want to be fading Russ. Like if you're staring down like a 40% ownership in cash or something like that on him, and this just strikes me as a game where, like, I don't know, just going against John Wall. The game is easily the highest over-under of the day at 229. Very thin spread with Washington, only 2.5-point favorite. These are the ones that are tough to watch if you haven't rostered the guy. That's just like me talking as a fan, not as like a DFS analyst. Right. Washington is going to get Dwight Howard back tonight. It's unclear how much he's going to play or how much is going to matter. Washington has really struggled this year. It seemed like every guy on the team hates each other. They're fighting in the locker room. They all want to be traded. It seems like a very, very toxic situation. I don't want to prescribe too much of what that means DFS-wise onto the team. And it's kind of tough to ignore when just like John Wall hates everybody. Everyone hates him. I don't really know.
The good news is it doesn't matter, because these guys aren't producing on their prices anyway. So
right.
I think you can just pretty flatly ignore them. There's a lot of signs here. Wall's another guy I'm writing up for my time of possession article that he's seen dramatic drops in time of possession over the last 2 years. And the assist numbers have come down. A lot of the numbers are coming down. So you know, he's still priced the exact same way he was 2 years ago, just because he's good and because he's a famous player, I guess. But right now, the 42 fantasy points a game looks about right to me, and I'm not going to stretch for him.
And they're just getting healthier. Like Markieff is going to come back tonight, which is going to knock down Oubre and Green. They're probably just meeting in the middle on all their prices. And I get that they have the highest. Well, there's no Toronto one yet, but Actually, I take that back. Sorry, I forgot about that. I didn't scroll down enough to this Golden State game. That's got a 240 over-under. So it's got the second highest over-under. My bad. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, all these prices sort of just coming back to meet in the middle. Knicks, the 8:30 game, go in and play Dallas. Knicks are fully in the tank. That's pretty clear. That as they wait for Porzingis to come back, they are, you know, they'll start Vonleh and play him some minutes, and sometimes Nikitalina plays minutes. And I mean, do you have any? Do we even? Is it even worth talking about the Knicks at this point in terms of DFS stuff? Or they become like the new Kings?
Yeah, I mean, they're not totally relevant, I wouldn't say, on a night-to-night basis. The new Kings might be a little harsher. That's a little bit of a beating. But some of these guys are going to be playable for big tournaments. It's just you're not going to touch them for cash. I mean, like someone like Hardaway, he can go off even at these advanced prices. He can also disappear on you completely. Or even just, you know, be very, very lukewarm given how scoring-dependent he is, like the 29 points he had against Golden State in the 34 minutes. So yeah, I think him, Vonleh, you know, some of these guys can go off, but for cash, you'd be pretty
good. Yeah, like Vonleh got 33 minutes last game and was awesome. 14 points, 10 rebounds, assists, blocks, steals. Like, he had everything. And it's just, so it's not that. It's not the per minute production. It's just that.
No, but he can play 20
minutes. That's the problem. It's like if he's playing well, sort of, or sometimes if he's not playing well, because it's unclear if they want to win games. Like, I don't know. It's like, with these tanking teams, especially when it starts really early, they're simply the most difficult to get a handle on. What about Dallas? I know people want to play Dallas guys so bad on a night-to-night basis. I kind of see it, and I just don't see it. I'm wondering how much the Dallas love on a night-to-night basis is based on some of their names more than anything else. Like, they're good players, but it seems like, to a man, these guys are all overpriced.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. It's kind of funny because we were on the buy low on the Dallas train. I feel like, since I was a teenager, but that's probably inaccurate, the like Wes Matthews and Harrison Barnes, who's played these guys more than we have done? I say no one. But Wesley Matthews was like 45% owning cash on Wednesday, and we didn't have him. I was like, I don't think Wesley Matthews has ever been chalk on a night where we didn't play him until then. So, and he went up there and he was like not even good on this $5,700 price tag against the Lakers. So yeah, I think people will own more shares of the Dallas guys than we will. I think some guys, it's just irrational optimism at this point. Like DeAndre Jordan strikes me this way. I don't see, like, he's not a different player than he was in LA. It's not really a different scheme. Why am I supposed to believe that he's worth 500 more than he was back then when he wasn't even like a great play back in those days? I mean, maybe Dallas is playing a little faster. I don't know. It just seems like, why bother? Like, you could just do better on an $8,600 price tag somewhere.
Yeah, look, I was high on Dallas to start the season too, because I did think we'd see a lot of minutes concentrated around their starters because they wanted to win. That was generally correct. I just think the price now is outkicked what we can really reasonably expect from them on a night-to-night basis. I think that's mostly what it is. I'm not calling them bad players. I think they're all just fairly priced to a little too expensive for what you can count on them night-to-night. I think that's kind of where I land with Dallas. And I get you. You sent me a text, you're like, forgot what it's like to roster Harrison Barnes on a night. And you're like, yep. You're like, this guy could just do a whole lot of nothing. Then he hits a couple threes, and then he just is like, did he even play the second half? Like, I'm not totally.
Yeah, he wound up with like 20 points at halftime and finished with 20.
The minutes suggest he played, and the production suggests that he did not. All right. Memphis goes in and plays.
I wasn't there physically, so I can't say that he was on the court.
Memphis goes in and plays.
I believe Yahoo. I have no reason to not believe ESPN.
The Jazz actually are a really relevant situation here. I wish they were playing anyone else but Memphis, but I still think it's worth talking about because I think there's going to be value here. So and the reason is because Donovan Mitchell has been already ruled out for tonight's game, and it looks like, and I only mention this because there is some part of him that would probably come in. Alec Burks has also been doubtful right now. Now Alec Burks's minutes are not so relevant on a night-to-night basis, but they probably would have been more with Mitchell. But to have them both out, do you think we see Exum start? B, I mean, could we see just like 35 or more minutes out of both he and Rubio? They are really short on ball handlers. Raul Nato's out as well. So they are really, really, really short on ball handlers for this team. Do you think we just see in a close game? Yeah, I know it's against Memphis, but could these guys even push 40 minutes? It's hard to see where else they're going to turn. I guess they've run Ingles at the point guard at times as well. So, I mean, what do you want to do here with Utah?
Well, I think you'll probably see bigger minutes out of Rubio. Exum, I'm not quite as bullish on him as our system is right now. I think, you know, the 25 minutes against Minnesota was nice to see, but he is also just another guy that sometimes he's on the court and it's the wrong personnel around him and he just does nothing at all. Like, you know, you'll see many, many games where he just comes in well under a point per minute in terms of fantasy production. So he's a good punt guy on FanDuel, I think. I think especially if you pair him along some other you know, higher floor punt sort of guys, then maybe you can stick him out there. But yeah, I think I'm, like you said, I think I get that little, if you hear hesitation in my voice, it is just because of the matchup. Like, there's definitely value here. Utah's playing a little faster. Some of their guys are probably still a little bit cheap as a result. But, you know, even a guy like Rubio, sure, you can project him for extra playing time, but he's not been good at all on a $6,200 price tag. So you're trying to find like 25% growth out of him tonight to get there. That might be stretching it a little too far.
I have Exum at 26 minutes. I think this is the complete and utter floor for his minutes. I think that he, I hope to hear after shoot around that we hear he's starting. I think if he's starting, he easily gets up to 30. And I think that there's a chance he just plays almost the entire game, unless I'm just completely missing something on who their other alternative ball handlers are besides he, Rubio, and like I said, the aforementioned Ingles. But they really just don't have much else. Maybe you want to throw Royce O'Neal in there. And even that, I just don't see as a viable option. And the other thing, too, about Mitchell is losing Mitchell is one thing to lose all of his minutes. So it's one thing if you lose like Markieff Morris, right, or something like that, like out of your starting lineup. It's another thing when you lose your easily your top usage guy and it's not even close. And so this, there are just so many shots to go around when a guy like Mitchell is off the court. On-court, off-court data is going to be a little spotty on him because he played so much last year. 9% uptick for Exum in our system on for the usage, 4% really across the board for every other guy that ever played for the team. So everyone's just getting upticks across the board. Yeah. I think Exum ends up becoming a chalk play tonight. I said, 26 minutes for me is about as low as I'm going to go. Memphis, they play Utah. Utah's still going to be slow, arguably going to be slower here without Mitchell. Anything to like here? Can we move on?
No, I think that we can probably pretty much move on. You know, I talked about this on a previous pod, but Utah, not quite the scary matchup they've been in the past. They're about league average now at this moment in terms of pace, and they're still a top team defensively in terms of defensive efficiency. But, you know, they used to be the very slowest team with the best defense, and now they're more like a middle of the pack pace team with pretty good defense. So
10 o'clock game, Toronto goes in and plays Phoenix. No line in the game right now, and I'm guessing it's because we're waiting on Devin Booker news. Like, I can't else figure out why there would be no line in this game. You have to figure, no matter what, whether Booker plays or not, Toronto is pretty heavy favorites going into this matchup. The key news and notes here, OG Anunoby is going to be back. He was out for the last couple of games, leading to a lot of minutes for Siakam. Fred VanVleet is questionable to play. And then on the Phoenix side, Isaiah Kanan and Devin Booker are both questionable. It feels like a blowout coming here. I wrote up Siakam and I wrote up Kawhi as good plays, and I'm a little worried about the blowout, and I'm also a little bit worried about Siakam's minutes going down a little bit with OG coming back. How much do we want to trust Toronto going into this game? Because it's still a great matchup against Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Siakam too. The rise in minutes directly correlated with OG's absence there, and you know, even in that Dallas game too, we saw him come out there and play 37 minutes and not even produce. The last couple games have been very, very dependent upon him racking up piles of defensive stats, which he just has no track record of doing in the past. I mean, the guy had 3 steals all season before the 4 steal game against Milwaukee. So I think that he looks like a bubble waiting to burst, frankly. And with more guys to come around and chew away at the minutes, I would be somewhat concerned about paying him an all-time high price. So I do like the other guys. I think, you know, Phoenix still is a good matchup here, but I'd just be a little bit gun-shy on paying up for him.
Yeah, I'm going to wait to see the line in this game and to see, because I think they're like 14-point favorites or something like that. I think we're going to have to probably take Kawhi down just a little bit in terms of overall minutes. We have him projected very high right now. Rightfully so. He's been very good, and this is a great matchup. And I'd be worried. I'd be a little bit worried about the blowout. The only other thing here is TJ Warren started for Ryan Anderson the other day. Still didn't play a ton. I'm not really sure. It's a terrible matchup against Toronto. Still very, very good on defense. I'm not sure you're seeing a ton of value, and I'm not sure we'll have all of the relevant news going into the game. So this is one to keep an eye out for. If both Kanan and Booker sit, maybe we bump still some of these guys up a little bit, and I don't know. I'm still not overly excited. Another game that could have been ended toward a blowout, Golden State and Minnesota. Golden State, 11-point favorites. They have been just another season of Golden State doing all warrior kind of things where they just kind of kill everyone on a night-to-night basis. They played in some closer games. 11-point favorites, this game has the highest over-under of the night. Is this, I mean, we talked about just easily stacking the Rockets. Are the Warriors a team with a lot of punt plays? Are they a team that we just like kind of want to stack across the board? They're obviously becoming more expensive, but guys like Steph, Durant, and Klay at his price, if this game stays close, there's probably no other trio that has a bigger upside than these three. How do we want to handle these guys for cash games with easily the highest over-under?
Yeah, it's easily the highest over-under. It's also the highest prices that we've seen on any of these players all season. Steph now is a full $1,000 more than we were paying for him, you know, just a few days ago, it seems like. Minnesota, you know, they're another one of these kind of interesting teams to figure out. It's largely the same personnel playing a lot faster than they did last year and with the same terrible defensive efficiency. 112.1 defensive efficiency ranks them in the bottom five of the NBA this season. So I think, yeah, Golden State utterly playable here. I think you're starting to get to a point, though, especially with someone like Steph, where he hasn't really sustained prices higher than this at any point in his career. So
yep.
You do have to ask yourself, you know, a guy, especially someone who's dependent upon the three, who can, you know, put up scoring in bunches, who can go on streaks, and not that you can necessarily know when he's going to go on a streak, but he can go on streaks. Do you think like and even if you figure he's had a hot start to the season, which is sort of my take, given that he's averaging 33 points a game, still only 49 fantasy points, which wouldn't get you there on a 10-7 price tag. So I'm a little bit hesitant. I don't like, especially if I'm sitting there on FanDuel and I'm looking at my other point guard options and I can decide between Curry, Paul, and Westbrook. Curry's the third guy in that group for me.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, Curry's one of those ones where I talk a lot about, like, oh, you know, is he running hot? Is he running hot? Is he running cold? What are the prices? And usually I'll you know, poo-poo one way or the other of a guy's performance. And then Curry's like the one guy I kind of don't want to do it because I'm like, I don't know. Is there a guy that can just shoot 53% from three for a season? He might be the guy. like I don't know. I don't think he's going to. He's 44% for his career.
Well, he could, but again, like right now, our system has him as like the 16th highest points per minute. Or I'm sorry, yeah, points per dollar point guard right now, having him for more than he's averaged on the season.
So, oh, yeah. I'm not saying he's a good play. I'm saying I was mostly just speaking about like how with almost any other guy and stat, I'm being like, he's running cold, he's running hot, and I'm pretty confirmed about it. Like I keep a steady hand with these things, and Curry's sure. The one guy I'm like, I don't know. Like if Kemba Walker's shooting 53%, I'm like, okay, dude, regression city, Kemba. Here we come. Yeah. And like Curry's like the one guy I don't want to make that statement with. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he will just shoot 50% from three for a season because he's Steph.
But I think he could probably make the statement though. Like it's been consistent on incredibly high volume. I actually think a guy like Curry, you can be more confident almost about the 3-point percentage with a guy like him because he practices them so much. He shoots them so frequently in games. Like the guy put over the last three seasons, this guy's put like 2,500 threes in the air. Like I think we have a pretty decent sample on what this guy can do.
Yeah. No, I know. The rational
versus someone like Andre Drummond or Karl Anthony Towns or one of these guys, Boogie, you know, they're practicing their threes in the offseason. I think you can see big gains. I think, yeah, he's a big time regression candidate for me.
What about the Warriors? Excuse me. What about the Timberwolves? And we can finish up here. But Jimmy Butler is back this game. He was sort of like a rest candidate last game. It wasn't really an injury part. It was general soreness or something like that. But it was assumed that he was going to play. Tyus Jones got the last second. Everyone in the stadium knew he wasn't going to play. Everyone on the Timberwolves knew he wasn't going to play, except like they just released it after the game started. Like just our jerks. Because it was like, oh, interesting that you had the MRI done before the game started and no one heard about that at all. The NBA injury reporting, Tyus actually points out a good reason about why this in a lot of ways should probably change, because if you had an MRI done on the guy, it means like you pretty much knew he was not going to play that night and they just nobody reported it until you saw that he wasn't dressed or whatever for the game. But that being said, Butler coming back, Tyus questionable, Teague questionable. I mean, do we see like 40 minutes out of Jimmy Butler here? Karl Anthony Towns has turned his season around after everyone thought he was dead after three games. And then again,
imagine my surprise, Doug.
Example infinity about why people overreact to early season stuff. But
what
do we want to do
with Minnesota? Like we expressly advised you to do. And
right.
My guess is you didn't.
Well, do you see any of these guys as viable, especially if they were to keep the game close?
Yeah, I think Towns is playable. I think the plan is to play him mid to high 30s minutes. I think there's been some weird game script stuff. I can't think that, you know, culturally they've changed that much that all of a sudden he's going to play 32 minutes a game. I'm prepared to be surprised there, but I don't think it will happen. And incidentally, I feel like Golden State is a very good matchup for a guy like Towns, who like you can sort of talk yourself into playing small against the Timberwolves, but Towns is like the exact guy who can just kill you for doing so, because he does have the size, he can stretch it out. So I think they'll have a great deal of difficulty dealing with him. So yeah, I do like Towns. Butler, I'm a little bit less confident on. The minutes have been, I don't think you want to give him more than 37 minutes for sure. That's his peak on the season. I think 36 is a fair number, and I just don't think there's any guarantee that he is going to be a $9,600 player on 36 minutes a game. So I think it's a chance. I think he could show up and do it. I think there's blowout risk. I think there's a lot that could go wrong if that's where you decide to wind up investing, you know, a big portion of your salary tonight.
All right, we're going to get out of here. A big Friday night in basketball. A lot of stuff that's going to be have to be considered and sort of tweaked as we go in. Hopefully we get a requisite amount of injury news well before lock with some of these games spread out. But we have you covered in that sense because DavidStar.com/deals gets you that free 7-day trial. It includes optimal lineups for NBA, NFL as well. Also the premium chat where James and I are there every single night talking basketball, kind of walking people through lineups, walking people through our process. That's premium a big – we think that people have often said that's one of the biggest value adds of the site, and that is included under the subscription package as well. So go check it out, DavidStar.com/deals. We'll be back again next week talking more hoops. Buddy, enjoy your Friday in the NBA.
Peace.